You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
U.S. forces give the nod. It's a setback for your country. Bombs and trenches all in rows. Bombs and threats still ask for more.
I could not your own.
You're listening to Back in the USSR, CFRU 93.3 FM. I am Siegfried, and that was Midnight Oil with U.S. Forces. And while I want to welcome you to our first show of 2020, and once again wish you a happy new year, a certain individual by the name of Donald J. Trump has made it rather difficult for me to do so. 2020 began with an act of war. Began with an act of war. On January 3rd, under personal instructions from the U.S. president, an American Reaper drone launched a missile strike on Baghdad airport that assassinated Major General Qasem Soleimani, leader of the Quds force of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, along with Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the second in command of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, along with several other people. This blatant act of aggression by the U.S. Empire followed the slaughter earlier in the week of at least 25 members of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces and the wounding of many others in a series of American airstrikes across Iraq. In response to those airstrikes, the carnage they left behind, and the naked violation of Iraqi sovereignty that they represented, Iraqi protesters stormed the fortified U.S. embassy in Baghdad, a widely hated symbol of imperial domination ever since the U.S.-led invasion of 2003 led to the utter devastation of what was once among the wealthiest nations in the Middle East. And that prompted Trump to send hundreds of American Marines into Iraq and, it seems, to take the unprecedented and criminal step of assassinating Qasem Soleimani, a military leader of a sovereign state, who was in fact on an official mission of diplomacy to the Iraqi president when he was killed. So the U.S. just slaughtered an Iranian diplomat as well as a general, along with Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, who, given that the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces, which were originally created to fight ISIS, given that the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces are an official part of the Iraqi Armed Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis was himself a high-ranking member of the Iraqi army when he was killed. So this is very serious. This is very serious. After the fact, the U.S. government tried to justify this act of war by claiming that Soleimani was planning attacks on U.S. soldiers, an unsubstantiated accusation that was faithfully repeated, nevertheless, throughout the American media and even by the majority of Trump's political opponents, from Nancy Pelosi to Elizabeth Warren, who claims to be progressive, none of whom had a problem with the assassination itself, only its timing and the fact that they were not consulted first before it happened. And the Canadian government's position was essentially the same. Bernie Sanders was one of the few people to really condemn the assassination in the United States, one of the few political figures to condemn the assassination, and to take a firm anti-war stance. Meanwhile, the U.S. corporate media has tried to equate Qasem Soleimani with Osama bin Laden, and Vice President Mike Pence even tried making the absurd claim that this Iranian general was somehow involved in the 9/11 attacks. The truth is something else. Qasem Soleimani, along with the Quds force of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, did provide training and weapons to Iraqi resistance fighters fighting against the American occupation forces after the 2003 invasion. He did support people who were exercising their legitimate rights under international law to resist that invasion, the invasion of their country by a foreign power. He did the same thing in Lebanon in 2006, when Iran provided support to the resistance movement Hezbollah, which was fighting against the Israeli invasion of the country. And more recently, Soleimani did more than any other one person, probably did more than any other one person to coordinate the battle against ISIS in Iraq and Syria. He coordinated with the Iranian army, with the Iraqi army, with the Syrian army, and with the Russian army to fight against ISIS. And really to defeat ISIS and take back the territory held by ISIS, free the prisoners and the slaves held by ISIS. And in all three of these cases, he stood up against the foreign policy agenda of America and its regional allies, such as Israel and Saudi Arabia. And that's ultimately why he was targeted and killed last Friday. More than 1 million people attended his funeral in Tehran today, in the capital of Iran. So we really do stand on the brink of war right now, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends. Trump has repeatedly threatened to bomb upwards of 52 major Iranian cultural heritage sites. You know, not military sites, cultural sites. Historical sites. Threatened to bomb 52 of them if there is any Iranian retaliation against U.S. troops in the wake of this assassination. Thousands of additional U.S. troops are being dispatched to bases in the Middle East. And Trump is now threatening the government of Iraq with sanctions, quote, so strong that those imposed on Iran would pale in comparison. And this was after the Iraqi parliament overwhelmingly passed a motion on Sunday to expel the more than 5,000 U.S. troops still present in the country. You know, so much for the U.S. respecting Iraqi democracy. For its part, Iran has finally backed out of the 2015 nuclear agreement, in which it agreed to freeze enriched uranium production in exchange for sanction relief. And it's important to mention that this agreement, signed under the Obama administration, was basically a dead letter after Trump pulled the U.S. out of it in 2017 and ratcheted up sanctions to truly devastating levels on the people of Iran. In particular, crippling their ability to have access to many life-saving medicines, which they can no longer import into their country. Unilateral sanctions, such as the ones that the U.S. has imposed on Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and North Korea, constitute an act of war under international law and are illegal under international law. And just as disturbing, Iranian Americans are being targeted by the U.S. government in the wake of the assassination of Soleimani. With at least 60 Iranians and Iranian Americans of all ages being detained at length and interrogated for hours at the Peace Arch border crossing in Blaine, Washington, this past Sunday. The Council of American Islamic Relations reported, citing an anonymous source from Customs and Border Protection, that, quote, the Department of Homeland Security has issued a national order for the Customs and Border Protection to report and detain anyone with Iranian heritage entering the country who is deemed potentially suspicious or adversarial, regardless of citizenship status. And Iranian Canadians were among those targeted at the Peace Arch and detained. So in light of all this, I understand why so many friends of mine are currently lying awake at night dreading the possibility of World War III breaking out by sunrise. I feel that. I understand the fear. But I also understand that we need to be in the streets, pushing back, fighting back, and striking fear, really striking fear in the hearts of those politicians, whether north or south of the border, who are directly or indirectly pushing us into a new war that would cost the lives of countless thousands and have a devastating impact on both the region and the world. Already there have been protest marches across America. Code Pink, the Answer Coalition, and other progressive groups have mobilized hundreds of people over the weekend in Washington, D.C. On Saturday, there was an anti-war rally in front of the American Consulate in Toronto, and there are plans for more. But these rallies are not enough. Nowhere near enough people have showed up to these demonstrations. There's so much more that needs to be done, and quickly. But the speed with which people responded in the wake of this egregious act of war by Trump is impressive in and of itself. You know, how fast these demonstrations took place. Like, days, even hours after this act of war took place. You know, people realize that this is an emergency and that urgent action must be taken to stop the push for war with Iran. They understand that the empire has to be stopped. And I'm old enough to remember 2003 and the lead up to the invasion of Iraq. An event which played a massive role in my own radicalization politically. And I remember learning about the carnage of that imperialist war, the destruction of that country, of America's blatant attempts to colonize it and seize its resources, and how the neoconservative politicians in Washington driving that war wanted so badly to expand it to Iran, into Syria, and into a whole list of other countries that were on their hit list. And their agenda remains the same today. You know, we have to stop this imperial war machine before it murders more nations in the name of profit and greed. Some of you might have noticed that the share prices of Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and the other giant arms manufacturers, and how they went through the roof right after Trump launched that fatal airstrike on Friday. And committed this act of war against Iran, this blatant act of war. We know who benefited from the Iraq war, and we know who will benefit from an even bigger and much more bloody war with Iran, a country with 80 million citizens. We have to stop this, brothers and sisters. We have to stop it now. And one more thing. Some people might criticize me for lamenting the death of someone like Qasem Soleimani. You know, this general in the Iranian armed forces, a religious conservative, who would likely be very uncomfortable being in the same room as an openly bisexual, unapologetic communist like myself. I think I've already explained myself pretty well in this one. I oppose empire, and I oppose imperialist war. An imperialist war, whether it's against Iraq, whether it's against Libya or Afghanistan, whether it's against Syria or now Iran, does nothing to improve the lives of marginalized people. In fact, the opposite is true. Whether it's women, religious minorities, racialized people, or LGBTQ people, American military intervention exposes them to greater violence, greater suffering, and greater marginalization. It never leads to liberation. Just look at what NATO-backed rebel groups did to black people in Libya after NATO started bombing the country and after the government was toppled there. Look at what Western armed and trained militant groups did to Christians and Shia Muslims in Syria, to say nothing of what they did to people accused of being homosexuals. Look at what U.S.-backed warlords did to women in Afghanistan after the Taliban were overthrown. You know, the violence and oppression only got worse. You know, even as the U.S. government made all these high-sounding statements saying they were going into Afghanistan to liberate Afghan women. Never happened. The empire is never your friend as an oppressed person. Ever. And war sure as hell isn't going to improve things for marginalized people in Iran. Or in the United States, for that matter. It's going to mean more austerity, more military spending, more people getting kicked to the curb. That's what it's going to mean in America. And another thing I want to say, opposing empire is a noble thing. I mentioned before how the mainstream corporate media in the U.S. is basically in lockstep, you know, condemning General Soleimani for supporting Iraqi resistance fighters fighting against the American occupation of their country after 2003, after the 2003 invasion. You know, they condemn him for that. They say he killed American troops and that he's a monster because of that. But regardless of anything else he did, he certainly is not a monster for doing that. Iran's efforts to oppose the U.S. invasion of Iraq were and are praiseworthy. Standing in solidarity with a people resisting occupation is praiseworthy, just as Iran's support for Palestinian resistance against Israeli occupation is praiseworthy. The American empire was stopped in Iraq. Domestic opposition to the war did grow and did become decisive and did force politicians ultimately to pull back. And the war hawks in Washington were unable to fulfill their dreams, their twisted dreams of imposing hegemony over the entire Middle East and dominating the entire Middle East. Internationalist resistance, resistance across borders with diverse people joining together against a common foe, is an effective thing. Ultimately, it's the only effective thing that will defeat empire and imperialism. Now, I said last week in my show honoring the 61st anniversary of the Cuban Revolution that I'd follow up this week by talking about the legacy of that revolution and how it impacted the world. And obviously, time is much more limited. But I can get into one notable example tonight of how the Cuban Revolution impacted Africa, and specifically how Cuba played a major role in the defeat of apartheid South Africa in the 1980s. This is not a history that is well known. In 1987, the army of apartheid South Africa invaded the country of Angola in an attempt to overthrow the socialist anti-colonial government there. Cuba, which had supported anti-colonial struggles around the world and had supported Angola's government since its independence from Portugal in the 1970s, after a very bloody independence war, Cuba sent troops to assist the Angolans in repelling the invasion. And the decisive battle in that war came at a place called Quito Carnaval in 1988. And the forces of apartheid South Africa were destroyed by an allied army of Cubans, Angolans, and Namibians. The result was the liberation of Angola, independence for Namibia, which had been formerly colonized by South Africa, and the steady collapse of apartheid in South Africa itself. You know, that battlefield defeat for the South African army really did play a major role in bringing down that system of racism and racial oppression. The Battle of Kitto Kanaval is still honored as an epic victory for internationalism and anti-colonial struggle in the face of racist imperialism. And it set an example that I hope more and more people are able to recall in the present day. For we, like the Cubans and Angolans, will need to join hands across borders if we hope to defeat the monster that we are up against now. And I want to say solidarity, comrades and friends. As Thomas Sankara used to say, when the people stand up, imperialism trembles. No war against Iran. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
América Latina obrera, no sé por qué no lo haces. El yanqui teme a la revolución. El yanqui teme grito, yanqui gojón, yanqui gojón. Y viene remontando el Amazonas, el grito rebelde del Carioca, y viene a unirse con su hermano, el obrero venezolano. América Latina obrera, América Latina obrera, América Latina. Levante en tus manos la bandera de la revolución, América Latina obrera, y grite con fuerza, yanqui gojón, yanqui gojón, yanqui gojón. Gringo, gojón. Los obreros de América Latina te dicen gringo, gojón, yankee, gojón. Levante en tus manos la bandera de la revolución, América Latina obrera, y grita con fuerza, yankee, gojón, yankee, gojón, yankee, gojón.
Focused brightly colored eyes, staring at the natural tan, 32 gently clenching wrinkled little hands, 17 company men, out of which only 12 will make it back again. Sergeant sends a letter to find. Their rivals, 'cause it matters.
celebrity minds, leading their 15 sordid, wretched, checkered lives. Will they find the solution in time, using their 15 pristine, moderate, liberal minds? 18 Academy chairs, out of which only 7 really even care. Doling out a garland of fine, celebrity minds, they're humbly taken by surprise. Cheer them on to their rise.
Was ist unser Leben wert, wenn allein regiert das Schwert und die ganze Welt zerfällt in toten Sand? Aber das wird nicht geschehen, denn wir wollen nicht untergehen und so rufen wir durch unser deutsches Land. Go home, ami, ami, go home, spalte für den Frieden dein Atom. Sag goodbye dem Vater rein, rühr nicht an sein Töchterlein, Lorelei, solang du singst, wird Deutschland sein.
Go home, ami, ami, go home, spalte für den Frieden ein Atom. Sag goodbye dem Vater rein, rühr nicht an sein Töchterlein, Lorelei, solang du singst, wird Deutschland sein.
Clay und Chloe aus USA sind für die Etappe da. Sollen die German Boys verrecken in dem Sand? Noch sind hier die Waffen kalt, doch der Friede wird nicht alt, hält nicht jeder schützend über ihn die Hand. Go home, ami, ami, go home, spalte für den Frieden dein Atom. Sag goodbye dem Vater rein, rühr nicht an sein Töchterlein. Lorelei, solang du singst, wird Deutschland sein.
Go home, ami, ami, go home. Spalte für den Frieden dein Atom. Sag goodbye dem Vater rein, rühr nicht an sein Töchterlein. Lorelei, solang du singst, wird Deutschland sein.
Ami, lern die Melodei von der Jungfrau Lorelei, die dort oben sitzt und kämmt ihr goldenes Haar. Wer den Kamm ihr bricht in zwei, bricht sich selbst das Knick dabei. Uralt ist das Märchen, traurig, aber wahr. Go home, Ami, Ami, go home. Lass in Ruhe den deutschen Strom. Denn für deinen Way of Life kriegst du uns ja doch nicht reif. Gruß von Lorchen, bon plaisir, der Kamm bleibt hier. Ami, hör auf guten Rat, bleib auf deinem Längengrad, denn dein Marschall bringt uns zu viel Kriegsgefahr. Auch der Frieden fordert Kampf, setz die Kessel unter Dampf, Anker hoch, das Schiff ahoi, der Kurs ist klar.
Go home, Ami, Ami, go home, spalte für den Frieden dein Atom. Sag und deine Vater rein, rühr dich an dein Töchterlein, Lorelei, solang du singst für Deutschland sein.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and I think that last three song combination was probably the first time those three songs were ever put together by anyone ever. That, of course, the middle song was 16 Military Wives. Some of you might know that. It's by the Decemberists, although they did it in 2005, so even that's getting a little bit of old school. But it was written, of course, in opposition to the Iraq War. And we have the first song we played was Ali Primera, the Yankee Go Home, you know, which really makes no bones about like where it stands. Like Ali Primera makes, you know, pulls no punches with that song. And he, of course, was a very iconic Venezuelan singer who, of course, very much opposed American neocolonialism in Latin America, you know, in the 60s, 70s and 80s, 90s and 2000s, because he was around for a very, very long time. And his musical career was very long. Another, and the last song I played was by the German communist singer Ernst Busch. And it was called Go Home, Ami. Ami being like the nickname for American is basically almost the German equivalent of like, you know, for Yankee, basically. You know, so telling Ami to go home is basically telling Yankee to go home. And more or less is the same sentiment that Ali Primera was saying in his song. So, yeah. So those three songs very much like very much in opposition to American imperialism and to the American Empire, which really is what I'm going for here tonight, because of course this show is all about stopping the impending war against Iran and really blocking the American war machine before it can go any further. And basically, it's going to be up to the people to make that happen. And to basically, yeah, you know, shut shit down. You know, that's basically all there is to it. You know, and I think, yeah, I think I'm going to put a few more songs on is what I'm going to do, kind of in that vein. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
There was a terrible frenzy when that man came here. There was a terrible frenzy when Ronnie Reagan came. Himself and his wife and his entourage epitomized all that is unpalatable about America. They came here and pushed everyone aside, walked upon our ways and trampled upon our culture purely for photo opportunities. All the gobshites and charlatans had a field day on this occasion of gross crassness and bad taste. Doubtless, there are a large amount of the same surrounding the visits of John F. Kennedy and Bill Clinton, but somehow their visits also had aspects of genuine empathy and love for this tiny island. At the time of Reagan's visit, I would not have been a big fan of the Irish Special Branch, but I nevertheless was irked by the manner the US police came in and literally shoved our poor men aside. I recall seeing large helicopters down in Munster one day, and there was an eerie discomfort at the huge invasive presence around the country. Babies were kissed, lounges got a coat of paint, toilets got paper, and Garrett giggled and fawned. The island of saints and scholars and gum beans and fucking arse lickers. Hey, Ronnie Reagan, I'm black and I'm pagan, I'm gay and I'm left and I'm free. I'm an unfundamentalist, environmentalist. Don't bother me. You're so cool playing poker with debt as the joker. You've nerve, but you don't assure us. With your paranoid vistas of mad Sandinistas and the way you're defending Honduras. We'll dig shelter holes when we've bargained our souls as for Pershing and crews we shovel. While the myth of our dreams turns to nightmares from the White House right back to the hovel. Hey, Ronnie Reagan, I'm black and I'm pagan, I'm gay and I'm left and I'm free. I'm an unfundamentalist, environmentalist. Don't bother me. You were wearing the green down in Ballyporeen, in the town of the little potato. With your arm around Garrett, you dangled your carrot, but you'll never get me to join NATO. As your dollars beckon, I think we should reckon on the cost of accepting your goal. Join your alliance and do. Oh, what's left when our freedom is sold? Hey, Ronnie Reagan, I'm black and I'm pagan, I'm gay and I'm left and I'm free. I'm an unfundamentalist, environmentalist. Please don't bother me.
You're listening to Back in the USSR, and that was Christy Moore, the Irish singer, with Hey Ronnie Reagan, which I think kind of captures some of the sentiment I feel, in opposition to Donald Trump right now. You know, I think Christy Moore writes that one opposing Ronald Reagan's visit to Ireland in the 1980s and standing in solidarity with everybody like that the U.S. is oppressing at that time, and really I'm trying to do something similar right now, you know, opposing Donald Trump and, the people he's oppressing, you know, and standing with the people he's oppressing, I should say, you know, and this is, because, like, we're at a very, very pivotal moment here. I should say the plan is basically, from what I know, like, there was the demonstration took place in front of the U.S. consulate in Toronto at noon, last Saturday. There's plans for another one at noon this coming Saturday. So that would be the 11th. There's plans for another one. If a war starts, there's going to be an emergency demonstration sooner than that. But of course, like that's going to be, hopefully that does not happen. There's not a need for that. But there is going to be a demonstration on Saturday, the 11th, in front of the U.S. consulate in Toronto. And I hope there's a greater turnout this time. I'm going to make a point to go myself. I couldn't make it there this weekend, but I'm going to make a point to go there on Saturday and be a part of that, because it's so important that that a stand be taken on this. I mean, the Canadian government is moving more or less with Trump on this. Like, they've really, just like they've moved with NAFTA and like in lockstep with him when it comes to NAFTA, and with Venezuela and other these foreign policy issues and stuff like that, they've more or less just caved or just gone in lockstep with them all the way. All the while claiming that they're so much more nicer and more rosy and more, you know, and more cute and all that kind of stuff than Trump, but effectively go along with him on virtually everything. So a signal needs to be sent to the Canadian government as well as to the American government that, hands off Iraq, hands off Iran, and basically just hands off the Middle East in general. I mean, just stop it and get the hell out. So after all that, you know, after all that intensity, I really want to play one of the songs which I played last week, which is much more positive, frankly. And I want to kind of wind up with the show with a few more, you know, songs which are really pay tribute to real heroes in the world. And this one, of course, I played last week, the last show I did of 2019, which was, of course, a homage to the Cuban Revolution and to the men and women who made that happen. You know, that major victory which took place against imperialism, against colonialism, really against capitalism, ultimately against racism and patriarchy as well. And this one, this song I played last week by Silvio Rodriguez, Te Molesta Mi Amor, which is a homage to Fidel Castro, who led that revolution. I want to play that now because, of course, you know, we've had the anniversary of the 61st anniversary of the Cuban Revolution was on New Year's Day, January 1st, last Wednesday. And even as all the horrible stuff that's happened since then, you know, these acts of war and all that kind of stuff and like the threats, you know, that remains a milestone, something that should be proud, you know, we should be proud of, something we should look to. We should look to the example of that revolution and to the men and women who made that revolution and be inspired by them, and remember what they did, and understand that victories can be won and victories must be won. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Te molesta mi amor de juventud, y mi amor es un arte. En virtud, te molesta mi amor sin antifaz, y mi amor es un arte de paz. Te molesta mi amor de humanidad. Y mi amor es un arte en su edad. Te molesta mi amor de surtidor. Y mi amor es un arte mayor. Mi amor es mi prenda encantada. Es mi extensa morada, es mi espacio sin fin. Mi amor no precisa fronteras como la primavera, no prefiere jardín. Mi amor no es amor de mercado. Porque un amor sangrado no es amor de lucrar. Mi amor es todo cuanto tengo. Si lo niego, lo vendo. ¿Para qué respirar? Te molesta mi amor de juventud, y mi amor es un arte en virtud. Te molesta mi amor sin antifaz, y mi amor es un arte de paz. te molesta, mi amor de humanidad, y mi amor es un arte en su edad. Te molesta, mi amor de surtidor, y mi amor es un arte mayor. Mi amor no es amor de uno solo, sino alma de todo lo que urge sanar. Mi amor es un amor de abajo que el devenir me trajo para hacerlo en final. Mi amor, el más enamorado, es del más olvidado en su antiguo dolor. Mi amor abre pecho a la muerte y despeña su suerte por un tiempo mejor. Mi amor, este amor aguerrido, es un sol encendido por quien merece.
Y sus